episode 318 of Late Night Linux, recorded on the 27th of January, 2025. I'm Jaru, and with me are Phelan.
Does it count if you don't put your hand on the book?
And Will.
Hello.
Yeah, no, Graham, he's otherwise engaged. I don't know what you're talking about, Phelan. We're going to ignore the elephant in the room. We're not going to mention it. We're going to pretend that everything is fine.
You've definitely been tangoed.
Americans are not going to understand that, and that's fine. Anyway, let's do some news. Free our feeds. Save social media from billionaire capture. This is a great new initiative from all sorts of prominent people in the tech industry, including the executive director of the Mozilla Foundation. And what they want to do is, as they say, free social media from billionaires. So what they're going to do is make like decentralized social media.
Right.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Does sound good. It's weird though. I don't know if I'll have a flashbacks here, but I swear this has happened before.
No, I don't think so. This is brand new. They're going to build it on top of Blue Sky, which is completely nothing to do with venture capital and rich people or anything.
Right. And there's obviously lots of Blue Sky nodes and stuff, yeah?
Well, no, but there's going to be. That's the plan.
Oh, and okay.
All it's going to take is $30 million to do it.
Oh, whew. Thank God for that.
And on the website, there's an FAQ. And one of the questions is, what will the money be used for? And they say it will take $30 million over 3 years for us to realize our three-step plan to free our feeds from billionaire control. The first one, establish a public interest foundation to support Blue Sky's underlying technology, their AT protocol, to become independent and globally standardized.
Oh, dear.
So they want to make a fucking foundation.
Awesome.
Have these people not heard of the fucking Fediverse?
They could spend a third of that money making maybe a really simple to use app that could help people. Like a wee wizard.
This seems to exist in a parallel fucking universe where the Fediverse doesn't exist. What's wrong with these people?
I found it very difficult to come up with an argument for this entire thing. It's so bizarre that they would put the effort into creating a website, registering a domain, getting Brian Eno to sponsor them in order to ask for money for something which you can get for nothing today, which is already a published standard. And it just boggles my mind how I just can't. I don't understand why they're doing this.
I have a bit of a clue. Maybe it's the NIH?
I don't know. I think it's because it's the kind of people who live in this world of massive foundations and nonprofits. I mean, one of the people who signed this letter, Jimmy Wales, founder of Wikipedia. These people don't understand the idea of spin up a VPS or an old server in a university or something. These people think that everything has to be this multi-million dollar scale, and it has to have a foundation behind it, and it has to have like loads of staff and everything. It can't just be a bunch of hackers spinning up servers that talk to each other.
I think it's one of our big problems in the fact that we seem to have this amazing ability to inherit bloat by default. It's like nobody seems to sit there and go, let's keep it as simple as possible. It seems to have gone completely out of fashion to the point where let's make this as complicated a both technical and management structure as possible so nothing can ever really get done easily.
It just smacks of jobs for our friends.
I just don't understand why anyone would give them money for this when they could be putting money into the Fediverse instead. I mean, granted, yes, the Fediverse could do with some more governance perhaps, and Mastodon recently announced that that's what they're going to do. They're going to sort out their governance, basically.
But I think there's a problem, right? Mastodon is an actual thing that exists already and can't be manipulated by a group, even if it is sort of in the better interest, inverted commas. These people like to probably put their name against something and haven't done it. If it's already done and actually works really well already, what have they got to do? Oh, wait, maybe we might find out that they're not actually needed at all.
Well, it just so happens that PixelFed have launched a Kickstarter, and that's gone really well. PixelFed is basically Instagram for the Fediverse. And I have no interest in that, but I know that a lot of people do. And so why don't these people raise money for stuff like this? Give Mastodon more money. Give PixelFed more money.
All right, okay. So I thought PixelFed was getting in on the AT protocol. Are they on the Fediverse stuff then?
Yes, ActivityPub, yeah. If you've got a PixelFed account, and you post loads of pictures of your dinner with a little caption on it, Well, from my Mastodon account, I could follow you and it would just look like a Mastodon post to me.
Ah, I see.
And vice versa. You would just see my stuff as text, or if I have an image in it, you'd see that in a more Instagram style layout. And they're actually also, the Pixel Fed people are working on Loops, which is their TikTok clone, which is not as far advanced. It's still a bit rough around the edges, but the idea is to make that viable.
Will it also block Americans for about 12 hours and then not?
But this is how it should be. You know, let's make something that uses the open standards that we already have, that you can interact with each other. And if you want a more Instagram-like experience, you can have it. If you want a more Twitter-like experience, you can have that.
It seems like a reasonable idea, Joe, but there is one underlying problem, which is, how am I going to make any money out of that?
What you need to do is get loads and loads of followers and then do sponsored posts with hashtag ad in them. Promote different skincare regimes and stuff.
Joking aside, that does seem to be the primary motivator to, well, everything, isn't it? It's just such a shame that corporations, organizations, whatever you want, can't get behind these small, scrappy startups that are providing something in a truly open way, because that is going to curtail their opportunity to make coin.
It's funny you use the word startup, because I don't see them as that. You could argue that Mastodon is kind of a startup based on the Fediverse, but they're looking to move to a nonprofit situation and proper governance, as I said. And I don't see it as scrappy startups. I see it as just hackers, as just nerds talking to each other, spinning up servers.
Yeah, you raise a good point. I agree. The idea of describing them as a startup implies that they will then stop being a startup and start being a real business. And yeah, that is not the goal here.
Yeah, because most startups end up being a real business and not just
failed businesses.
Failed businesses with loads of venture capitals burnt. Well, just fuck these guys, quite frankly. Mm. Raise money for existing open standards. We don't need another one. Blue Skies just really started to annoy me, just how it's taken off and how it's just Twitter too. Mm. Like,
yeah, it really is.
How do people not see that? Yeah, okay, there's more normal people on there, but fuck normal people. I may or may not be a misanthrope. I don't know. Phelim, you've snuck a quick KDE corner in. Plasma 6.3 Beta 2 is out.
Yeah, we're very coming up close to the release of Plasma 6.3. Second beta is out, and yes, if people can give it a go, that'd be fantastic. There are live images available, so you could actually fire it up in Docker or a VM or whatever you want to do if you don't want to ruin your own machine. And yeah, the more bugs ironed out now, the better.
All right, and Season of KDE 2025.
Yeah, there's 14 projects participating this year. A lot of them are quite cool. Some KDE Live stuff. There's AudioTube for listening to music like you do on your phone. A few games things as well. And yeah, it's good to see this. And they're still going to continue on with that eco test stuff as well, which is nice to see that. So yes, bring it on.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by Servomania. Go to servomania.com/LNL to get 15% off dedicated servers recurring for life. Servomania is a Canadian company with over a decade of experience building high-performance infrastructure hosting platforms for businesses globally. Servomania has up to 20 gigabits per second network speeds in 8 locations worldwide for optimized global reach. They have flexible custom server configurations tailored to unique needs, as well as a personal account manager offering free consultations. With 24/7 live chat support and support ticket response times under 15 minutes, you can always keep your systems running smoothly. Alan Jude from 2.5 Admins has been a happy Servomania customer for over 7 years. So support the show and join him at a hosting provider that truly delivers. Get 15% off dedicated servers recurring for life at servomania.com/LNL and use code LATENIGHTLINUX. That's servomania.com/LNL and code LATENIGHTLINUX. I did a bad thing, lads. I bought a new phone. Well, new to me, secondhand, for a very, very good price.
Well, you must be coming up on 8 years to get a new phone, yeah?
It's been 2 years since I got the Pixel 7, and so I got myself a Pixel 9 Pro Fold.
I am sorry, I need to take a drink so I can spit it over the microphone.
What? So I suppose ask me anything about my cool new folding phone.
How badly does keys damage it when you sandwich them in the middle of it and go crunch?
Every time I close it, I make sure there's not even any dust on it.
Oh, there's only one time. Only one time is all it takes.
I know. And I close it very, very carefully. And I don't slam it shut or anything.
Genuinely, how long do you expect it to be foldable and usable in that state?
I don't know. I really don't know. I hope it's more than a few weeks. I'm going to try and take care of it, but it does feel very fragile is the bottom line. And it is the biggest worry with it. But sometimes you have to live for today and not for tomorrow.
How often do you fold and unfold it? Like, roughly. I mean, I'm not talking about, I'm sure you don't sit there at a counter counting them per day, but is it like 2-3 times? Do you like do a big reading session? I.e. go for a massive poo. what is the general use of them like?
Well, let me describe it first. So when it's folded closed, you've got essentially a phone that is fairly similar to my Pixel 7, slightly faster, I think, but you don't even notice that. But you've got this outside normal glass screen, and it feels like just quite a chunky Pixel, essentially. I'll tell you what it is reminding me of. You know boomers who have those folio cases? It's like a leather thing, and it folds over the thing.
I hate those things.
And then you fold it open, and it feels really thick. That's very much what it feels like in the hand. So it feels very heavy and chunky, basically. But otherwise, it's just a normal phone. But you ask, how often do I open it? Whenever something is small and shit to read. PDFs are the classic one. Someone sent me a PDF the other day. I opened it. I was like, I can't read it. Opened it up. Suddenly it's clear as day. I can read the whole thing. No problem.
That does sound quite good, all right. PDFs on a phone are awful.
Yeah, you'd zoom in and move, scrolling left and right, and it doesn't like adapt to the phone size or anything.
I love that fit to nothing that is actually suitable mode that every PDF reader seems to have.
But my main use case is reading news and, you know, researching for this show and others, essentially. Because my RSS reader that I use, Feed Me, that looks great when it's unfolded into the tablet mode. And my wife did make the point that a pair of reading glasses would have been a lot cheaper. And then reading articles. I mean, I shared a little video with you lot to tell you that I'd bought this. And, you know, I was looking at, was it the Register or something like that? And it's just, it's horrible to read an article on a phone. Okay, horrible is not the word, but it's not as pleasant as it could be. But yeah, say you link to a blog post or an article or whatever, and you're reading it, and then you unfold it, it just suddenly becomes a really pleasant reading experience.
So when you open it up, is what's on the front screen then just immediately transferred to the inside screen, or is it an entirely different workspace?
Generally, yes. It depends on the app that you've got open, is the bottom line. Some apps adapt to being open and closed better than others, but there is generally continuity, yes, between the two.
And does the screen on the inside feel plasticky at all in the way that the glass ones don't?
Yes.
And how is that? Is it acceptable?
It's definitely acceptable, yeah. Yeah. And the crease is what a lot of people want to know about. And it's a weird thing, the crease. You can feel it with your finger, definitely. And if you're looking off axis, you can really, really see it. But there is a sweet spot when it's looking directly at you that you just can't see it at all.
Have they warped the text around that then to unwarp it? Like, you know those weird 2D pictures on football and rugby pitches where they have advertisements that if you see it not the right angle, it looks like a load of shite.
Mm.
Is it like that?
I don't think so. I don't know, maybe. I tell you, this is such a niche reference that no one is going to understand, but the crease when you look at it off axis looks like 3D. It looks very much like a flame maple top on a guitar where it sort of like moves. So the three people who know what that means, you'll get it exactly.
Do you think this is the future of phones? Do you think that they will all, or the majority, will be like this in a couple of years?
No, I don't think this is the future for normal people. Apart from anything else, the likes of Apple want to sell you a phone and a tablet, whereas this serves both purposes. So no, I think it'll be a niche thing that will somewhat be successful and there'll be a market for it. But they are extremely expensive. Like I said, I did not pay full whack for this. I got an incredibly good deal on eBay.
He's only got minor scarring near around his kidneys.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Do you think Apple will come out with something similar?
Well, there's always rumors about this, but I don't think so, because it would cannibalize the iPad and they just don't want to do that. So I don't think it's in their business interest to do it. Whereas Google have only got one tablet and it's massive. But I think the iPad mini would just cease to exist if they had a foldable iPhone. But I'll tell you, one of the great things is the browser. Unfortunately, not with Firefox, but with Chrome at least.
There's a shock.
When you open it, you have a proper tabs at the top browser.
Okay, weird.
And if you go to a website while it's in tablet mode, it'll automatically request the desktop site, or it'll give you a bigger version of the site or whatever. But if you go to the site first when it's closed and then open it, it doesn't automatically adapt until you click a link. So it can be a bit confusing sometimes.
Now you've had it for a little while and played with it, could you quite easily go without?
Well, I mean, I could go without a phone generally, couldn't I, if I had to? But I wouldn't want to, is the bottom line. I think it would suck to go back to the Pixel 7 and click on an article that I wanted to read and go to unfolding. Oh, I can't do that. I'm going to have to strain my eyes to read it. But one thing it's not that good for is videos, because it's basically square when you unfold it. It's not quite square, but it's almost a square aspect ratio. So videos just don't look that good. You're much better off really just turning the phone sideways when it's closed. So it's very much a productivity tool rather than an entertainment tool, I would say. Although that said, I've been doing some document editing and stuff, and it's still, you still don't have your mouse and keyboard, do you? So it's really good for consuming productivity stuff, which seems like an oxymoron, but like I say, just it's almost like aimed at me, someone who has to read a lot for these shows. Like I have to read a lot of RSS feeds, I have to read a lot of articles, or I choose to or whatever. And so it's perfect for that. And looking at photos as well, that's quite cool.
What type of JPEGs?
Mucky JPEGs.
I've not looked at any mucky JPEGs on this phone at all.
Does it eat the battery when you're on that?
I don't know, really. It must, but I've not really noticed it.
And presumably the other screen turns off in the front when the other two are on.
That's a great question. Let me have a look. Yes, yes, it does.
Okay.
One thing that's a bit annoying is trying to find a case for it.
Mm.
It's a very tricky engineering problem to have a case that fits it. And I was looking at all sorts of ones, and in the end, I got one for like £8, which doesn't use double-sided tape like most of them do, because this is actually one piece of plastic. So that was tricky. Oh, I'll tell you, it's so nice to have a proper fingerprint reader again. Having had the underscreen one on the Pixel 7, which is just terrible, to have one on the power button that just works every time. Because the Pixel 7, it works about like half the time, maybe at best. Whereas this one, just every single time, just straight away. So nice. But all in all, very happy with it so far, but very, very worried that it's going to break any minute.
When it does break, will you buy another one?
It depends how long. If it's like in 3 years, maybe. If it's in 3 days, probably not.
Well, that's fair. Let's come back in 6 months and see, one, if it's still working, and two, if you found more use cases for it and then suddenly couldn't live without it.
Because the bottom line is that when the inside screen breaks, and it is like a hard drive, it's not if, it's when, I will still have a fairly decent Pixel 9, essentially, that's just very thick and chunky and reminds me of my failure. Unless I break the outside screen first.
Oh.
And have to only ever use it in unfolded mode.
That would be hilarious. Actually, I hope that happens.
You bastard. Okay, this episode is sponsored by Tailscale. Go to tailscale.com/LNL. Tailscale is the easiest way to connect devices and services to each other, wherever they are. Everyone these days has a VPN as a sponsor, but Tailscale isn't like those. This isn't about hiding your browsing habits from coffee shop owners, and it's not about watching Netflix in another country. Tailscale is a proper VPN for connecting your devices securely. It's great for companies, and it's great for self-hosters. Loads of the Late Night Linux family hosts use Tailscale because it gives you the power of WireGuard with a simple and quick setup. I got it up and running in a few minutes without having to open any ports. Tailscale lets you connect anything, anywhere. Provide connectivity to any resource for your organization. From dashboards to a Synology NAS or Windows file server, from self-managed DNS servers to software as a service applications, if you want it off the public internet, Tailscale will provide secure access. Tailscale's personal plan will always be free, so support the show and try Tailscale out for free today. You'll get up to 100 devices and 3 users for free at tailscale.com/LNL with no credit card required. That's tailscale.com/LNL. Let's do some discoveries then. Will, Hugin, I know what this is. This stitches photos together.
It does, and it has been doing so for over 20 years. It's an ancient piece of software. It's in the Debian archive and in the Ubuntu archive. The reason I got this software installed, well, I was looking for something to take a series of photos and stitch them together so that it looked like a pile of things in the middle of the frame of the photo had grown over time. And rather than set up a camera and a tripod and frame the picture exactly correctly each time, I thought I'd just freehand it and then do it in software, because how hard could it be? And the answer is much, much harder than I thought it was going to be. When I ran the photos together over the course of a couple of seconds, like 50 photos over the course of a couple of seconds, the frames jumped about all over the place and looked atrocious. So rather than reshoot all of those frames and get a camera and a tripod and do it properly, I went looking for a piece of software that would do it for me. And I came across Hugin, and it's exactly what I wanted. It's actually designed to take a series of photos that are panoramic photos as individual cells and put them together and skew them and match them up so that you get a large seamless photo which has been stitched together perfectly. But it also has the ability to take a whole bunch of photos and locate in those frames the bits of commonality, and then it can really understand the frame that you're in and skew all of the other pictures around so that they match that first frame. And the end result is you get a series of photos that run together almost perfectly. You can't do it exactly right because there's subtle movements, like the camera is twisted slightly or you're slightly closer or further away, and so it needs to zoom in and out and trim. But it does a very, very good job. So, fantastic piece of software for skewing pictures, stitching them together, and generally doing very clever things. I will say, however, that it is an absolute sod to use. The instructions are very complicated. The UI is, well, baffling, I suppose, is the best way to put it. It's not straightforward. There is a sort of wizard now, which makes things way, way easier. And that's what I used. But trying to recreate the steps that the wizard went through to adjust what it was doing, I found basically impossible. I could not recreate the steps necessary to build the maps and have it stitch the photos together in the way that I wanted it to. But it was successful, and I would recommend it. If you've got a whole bunch of photos that you want to stitch together, then it can analyze them and it can do most of the work automatically for you. And the end results are quite phenomenal.
Was it a pile of Christmas presents that was growing as you wrapped them?
Not exactly, but that it was along those lines. It was for a lightning talk what I did.
It was bugs piling up on the software that you look for them.
It's funny that smartphones have somewhat made this obsolete, haven't they? With the panoramas, at least.
Don't know what you're talking about. My phone doesn't do that.
Smartphones, fair name. Smart.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair.
Well, yeah, you're right. The panorama has been all but solved now on modern phones. But yeah, there's a lot more use cases that it can do.
How can it be 20 plus years old when clearly it needs modern AI to do this sort of thing?
This is a very good question. Maths, I expect, is the answer.
Are you trying to claim that AI is a bit useless after all?
It's almost like we've been able to do most of the good stuff that AI purports to do for 20 plus years.
Except search, where we already had that solved and now seem to have unsolved it.
Yeah. And chatbots, they've not really got that much better, have they, over the last 20 years? It's almost like it's all bullshit. Fadim, Stratoshark.
A few caveats. I could not get this to work on Linux because it involved compiling the universe. And it also didn't work the way they included instructions. I followed them partially and I made a right mess of it. So what I did was captured some data on Linux and then used a Windows VM to run the application, which irked me no end. So they already lose points. They also gave me an example of capturing data using Sysdig, which is quite an interesting tool, which installs some drivers into your kernel. So it's a bit questionable whether you want to really do that or not. Depends on the box. But I created a capture file with that, which it then told me wasn't valid. And I was like, oh, this is going real well. And they have a couple of examples on their site, which I downloaded and ran. And every time I open one of those, it tells me that something's a malformed packer and invalid. I'm like, oh, cool demos, guys. So what it is essentially Wireshark, but for application level protocols, which is a nice, cool goal. I mean, you can obviously do things like S-trace, whatever. You can see all the system trace calls, things like that. But it puts it in an interface that you know and love, maybe, or hate, which is Wireshark. And it does do a nice job of that. But it is clearly early days and some bugs need to get squashed and distros need to start providing it because the build process is a massive pain in the arse. Promise. That's what it is. It has promise.
So what were you doing with this that you didn't want to do with S-Trace?
S-Trace is, it's awful. I hate it. And by the time I come around to it, I forget half the things I need to do with it. The tracing mode, I always pick the wrong stuff or something's multi-threaded and then you don't catch all the right threads. And you look at some of the stuff and you go, oh God, what do they mean again? And it would be nice to have something that was a bit more usable, to be quite honest. And I know there's a lot of tools out there, awful lot of tools that you pay a lot of money for that don't really do anything different, to be quite honest. And it's nice to see a FOSS project kind of catch up to a level where you can send a developer to it, even if it's not you, or it's somebody at a higher level and say, look, just open that file. It's like a capture file that you do at Wireshark. And then they can just do that. And it's got integration with a couple of the extra tools that they use, which is Falco, which I think is used in a lot of, it's kind of designed for if you've got cloud servers or something in a data center that you can get them to dump an output to and then import it to your local machine to view all the data on it, see if you've got a bug going through something like Nginx or whatever. If it had a bit more time, I think it could be something good. I just think, well, the version I looked at is a bit shonky right now.
It's strange that they don't make a Linux pre-compiled download available.
It really is. Really annoying as well. Yeah. I mean, I don't get why they don't. Surely it's all part of a build system these days.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be a market for it on Linux, surely. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, they do have the Mac and they do have Windows. So, I mean, at least they've got those covered. And yeah, you would hope distros pick it up. But yeah, right now it's a bit not quite working properly, I think. Or they need to refresh their demos to try them out. But it did load up. It did sort of work. But yeah, it did complain.
Well, I have been going on about Innertune, the Android app that lets you have YouTube music for free, essentially. But it does break fairly often because Google are bastards. Well, Ben wrote in to suggest Outertune, which is a fork of Innertune and is seemingly more actively developed. And I have installed this. It isn't in the main F-Droid repo, so you have to add a repo for it, which is a little bit annoying. But nevertheless, I got it installed, and it does seem to work where Innertune didn't, and it's been updated more recently. So it seems like Outertune is the cool kid's Innertune.
You could use AudioTube too on KDE if you wanted.
I could do.
I have no idea how breakable that is, though.
Well, I would imagine it breaks all the time because YouTube keeps changing things. It's not the dev's fault of the free software that you're running. It's what it's connecting to, which keeps changing.
NewPipe has been really good for quite a while. It did break in the last few days, mind you, but it's been fixed again, which has been very nice.
Yeah, that's what I've been using since Innertune last broke. So I've not really been in the habit of using it, but I do need to try out Outertune a bit more than just the quick test I did. But so far it seems very similar, but just works. So thank you, Ben. Great suggestion.
Is there a desktop version, do you know?
I don't know, really. I mean, why would you need it?
Looking at the GitHub page and the screenshots, there looks like there's some nice features for syncing playlists and managing your sort of favorites and things like that, which I don't think you can really do with YouTube on the desktop in the same way. So it seems like it could be quite a nice augmentation to music listening on the desktop.
Someone did write in ages and ages ago with an Electron app that did similar stuff to that. And I can't remember what it's called. You'll have to have a search through latenightlinux.com/discoveries. And I'm sure that there is a standalone YouTube thing that does that kind of thing, not necessarily focused on music, but certainly more full-featured than YouTube. Okay, this episode is sponsored by Automox. Are you prepared for whatever shitstorm may hit your desk during the workday? Automox has your back. Check out the brand new Autonomous IT podcast. Listen in as various IT experts discuss the latest Patch Tuesday releases, mitigation tips, and custom automations to help with CVE remediations. Make new work friends. Listen now to the Autonomous IT Podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you tune into your podcasts. On to a bit of admin then. First of all, thank you everyone who supports us with PayPal and Patreon. We really do appreciate that. If you want to join those people, you can go to latenightlinux.com/support. And remember that for various amounts on Patreon, you can get an advert-free RSS feed of either just this show or all the shows in the Late Night Linux family. And you even get some episodes early. And if you want to get in contact, you can email show@latenightlinux.com. A few days ago, I had a chat with Popey and Laura, who are organizing an event. So let's hear that now. Welcome to the show, Popey and Laura.
Hello.
Hello.
So you are here to promote your event, Barcamp Surrey. So what is Barcamp Surrey?
So Barcamp is an unconference which is taking place on August 2nd in Godalming in Surrey.
So what is an unconference?
It's a bit like a conference, but without a schedule set ahead of time. So the people who arrive are the people who determine what talks are going to be happening at the event. So if you get a load of nerds, you'll get a load of technical content. If you get a diverse group of people with different hobbies, then you'll get different talks. And that's what we're aiming to do, get a lot of different types of people to talk about their hobbies, their interests, and things they know about at one place on one day.
Right. So not just technical stuff this time.
No, we hope that people who come along from different walks of life and different backgrounds will be feeling comfortable that they can talk about what they're interested in, different hobbies. It could be radio, it could be stuff that they're building or making, not necessarily do a tech.
So for example, at Ogcamp in Manchester, there was a talk given about sewing machines, knitting machines, crochet, you know, other creative avenues other than staring into a computer all day. And because it's a local event, as in we're not expecting people to fly in from around the world, but we're expecting people to come from the local community, there's the expectations that some of those people may not have been to one of these events before and likely won't necessarily work in tech. And so they may have different perspectives, different hobbies, like could be bell ringing, could be making magazines, it could be artwork, it could be anything. And you'll often find that some of those kind of sessions are the most interesting ones because they're things you didn't expect to see at this kind of event.
Right. And so this is just a one day, all day event from 9 until 5:30.
Yeah, just one day on a Saturday, August 2nd. We just thought we'd just try it for the first time this year and see what happens. You know, we found a venue very easily, which is kind of fortunate, which made things a bit easier, I think, in the long run to making it actually happen. And so we thought one day people will come along and enjoy the event.
The really nice thing about the venue is all the rooms are on the ground floor. There's plenty of room for people to spread out and there's parking and it's accessible from motorways if you've got a car. And it's also, there's a mainline train station nearby. So it's not in the middle of nowhere. It's not super hard to get to. Locals will obviously not have a problem, but people coming from a bit further afield shouldn't have a problem either.
And so the question I always ask is, what about social events afterwards? Will there be a piss up afterwards, I suppose, is the question.
So the plans for the RFD event are still in the works because obviously we've just kind of working on it right now. But we definitely do hope to have some form of activity in the evening, be it a gathering or just kind of hanging out somewhere together. And hopefully it'll be a great opportunity for those that have come along to the event who'd like to continue the conversations into the evening, be it over a drink, over a board game, or just catching up, mingling up afterwards.
And roughly how many people are you expecting then?
I think we'll get about 150 people there. I'm hopeful of that. I think given the size of the venue, the location and the accessibility to it, I think it's and this much notice out. I'm hoping that there's enough opportunity for people to book it in their calendars to attend.
Yeah, you never really know how many people are going to come. And when people start, I was going to say buying tickets, but the tickets are free. So when people start getting their ticket, yeah, you see that number climbing. It's a good indicator. But things can happen on the day, you know, bad weather or really good weather. And then you suddenly get an influx of people or someone might talk about it on social media or there might be nothing else going on. No football matches, no, you know, school trips or anything. And so people just suddenly have spare time and they can go. So it's highly variable. You never really know.
And do you need a ticket then?
You do need to register ahead of time just to help us for the numbers for catering and just to track those who are going to be on site during the day for numbers for the venue. So yes, you do need to register, which you can do very easily on the website. Just click on register and you can register yourself for a number of tickets for extra people. And it is a free event, as Alan mentioned.
Right. And so the website is barcampsurrey.org.
That's right.
I just give one big shout out to our designer, Sunshine. He did an amazing job to create something that's very unique and very pretty and very accessible as well, which is nice, mobile friendly and on the website.
And very quick as well.
Very quick.
We gave them a brief and then suddenly there was a website up. And also we should say a thank you to Bitfolk, who provided a VPS for us to host it on.
That's true.
So yeah, if you want to come along to a Barcamp, maybe your first on conference, maybe not. Maybe you're a veteran, then check out barcampsurrey.org and get yourself a ticket and put your email address in and we'll send you a reminder. So we know it's a long way off, but we'll send you reminder emails and we'll be posting about it all over the place.
Well, thank you very much for coming on and telling us about it.
Thank you very much for having us.
Cheers, Joe.
Right, well, we'd better get out of here then. We'll be back next week when who knows what it'll be. Maybe Graham will be back, maybe he won't. But until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Phelan.
And I've been Will.
See you later.